Blog Talk Radio.
You are listening to a pre-recorded interview from the archives of Prophecy Keepers Radio. You have been led by the Spirit to Prophecy Keepers Radio, a cooperative service of the White Roots of Peace Council. Whether it be the modern Asaga of Peru, the current Kahunas of Hawaii, today's medicine people of the Americas, the Holy Ones of Africa, shamans of the East, North, West, and South, or the present-day Atawahis of the Cherokee, we bring you the traditional elders and teachers of our modern times and their confidants from the Americas, the steppes of Asia, the Holy Land, the islands of the sea, Africa, and Australasia. We have not been conquered, and we defy the established order. This is Will Bluewater, the host of Prophecy Keepers Radio, speaking on behalf of the White Roots of Peace Council.
It's 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow?
Thanks for listening to the Wisdom of the Elders on Prophecy Keepers Radio, revealing closely guarded ancient secrets here in the modern information age of Aquarius. This station's only means of support is through donations and purchases of the Prophecy Keepers Trilogy and Preparedness Library, which includes lifetime online access to a printable 1,000-page intelligence briefing and a worldwide indigenous prophecy encyclopedia. Now, folks, there's nothing else like this collection on the planet. You'll receive instant access to the Prophecy Keepers Wisdom Treasury Vault. This is a huge 4.88 gigabyte library, 3,287 files and 222 folders. It includes the Prophecy Keepers Preppers Self-Reliance files and all of our previous over 100 Prophecy Keepers interviews. So head on over to prophecykeepers.com right now and have a free sneak peek today of two-thirds of the Prophecy Keepers trilogy and a peek of the dashboard of the Prophecy Keepers Wisdom Treasury Vault. Osio Ginalii Tahiju Toigu, which means, hello cousins, I'm fine, how are you? This is your old buddy Bluewater coming to you from the Cumberland Plateau in east central Tennessee, the ancient home of the Aniuntikwalaski, the people of the lightning and thunder, or the military protectors of the old Cherokee Nation.
Well, hello everybody. This is your old buddy Bluewater coming to you from Booger County in the mysterious Ozarks in Mid-America, and our special guest, 23rd of July, 2005, once again, is Il Duce, the Duke of Native Prophecy, Dr. Robert Ghost Wolf. How are you, Doctor?
Okay.
Il Duce.
I feel like I should have this, you know, breast full of medals or something.
Well, you just want to make sure they don't hang you up by the heels like they did originally.
Yeah, we know how that story ended.
Yeah. Well, anyway, I thought it was good for a laugh. But
so for all of you out there who these prophecies come true for, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
But you asked.
Well, you know, as we get older, we don't get smarter. We just have moments of clarity.
Oh.
And I understand that.
In those moments, is that when I hear God laughing?
Yeah, something like that.
Okay.
But I understand. I had one this last week about this October 13th date, which went right over my head last year, but so we can talk about that a little later on in the interview. But I understand you've had some moments of clarity yourself this year, and some things that you took a look at and predicted in the past are, oddly enough, now coming to pass.
Well, I think it's like our little brief conversation earlier this afternoon. It appears that a lot of the things that I saw and the time-space continuum are now becoming in sync with the manifesting reality, you know. Meaning, when you look at things, you don't really, you know, I don't see the New York Times in a headline and a date. I just see a picture, and it's usually like a living picture. I don't see stills, you know. I can't do close-ups yet. you know, I zoom in on this. I haven't mastered that part of it. But I see things in pictures, and I go, wow, you know. But there's no date, you know, and I think, you know, there's a danger for one who decides to prophesy and then put a date on it. And the danger is, number one, a prophecy is a warning. A prophecy is a vision of, if you don't change the way things are, if you don't change the conditions of the environment, so on and so forth, of the dream, then this is what will most likely occur. And so it's a warning in that it gives you a chance to get things right. That make sense?
Right, right.
So a good prophecy is one that people heard, people took action on, and it doesn't occur.
That's right.
And yet, if that happens, then you're a bad prophet.
we should all be as lucky as Jonah.
Yeah, you know.
To Nineveh and prophesied, and they repented. But
yeah, but he still got swallowed by the whale.
Well, but we shouldn't get mad because they did, you know. He got mad at the Ninevites,
you know.
Because they
did. And then on the other side of the coin, if you say things that are outrageous and they happen, they call you the Antichrist.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so it's like, oh, okay. So it's a very funny business.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, it's...
Well, Pharaoh's used to have guys like you and me killed, you know, to bring you bad news. You know, the Greeks used to kill bearers of bad news, and it's a funny business.
Yeah, and yet, again, there was that two-sided sword.
Yeah.
If you don't tell me the prophecy, I'll kill you.
Yeah.
And if I don't like the prophecy, I'll kill you.
Well, you got to be a glutton for fun.
But if it's a lie, then you're fake.
Well, you know, I had an interesting dream this morning. You know, sometimes dreams are full of irony. And I dreamt some other things, but the one that I told myself I would remember. Everybody knows Don Knotts. You know, he's more famous as Deputy Fife on the old TV series, what the heck was the name of it? Andy and Mayberry or whatever it was called. Anyway, Don Knotts is a kind of a comical guy, plays the fool usually. And in his later years, I guess because he was balding, he started wearing one of those Tony hats. Well, in this dream this morning, I saw a picture of Don Knotts facing me, and he was on my left. And on his left, also in a Tony hat, was Yoda. So, after I woke up, I thought about that for a while. I thought about the way the day worked out, because we did have a cancellation today. Gordon Banner wasn't able to be with us. And I thought about, oh, I get it. I'm Don Knotts. I'm the fool. And we're meeting Yoda, you know. you've forgotten more about Native prophecy than I'll ever know. You know, so
uh-huh.
I'm playing Don Knotts to your Yoda tonight. How's that?
I think it is size that matters. We are, you know, it's no longer a slow-moving train. This train's going ahead at full speed right now.
Yeah, seems that way.
And it's moving with the matrix or whatever one chooses to call that which composes the experienced reality is literally ripping through lives and people, and things are happening so fast with no, it's almost impossible to plan.
Well, I know you're experiencing it right now.
Oh, I'm in the middle of the whitewaters.
You know? Oh, yeah, me too.
On one hand, I've got this incredible thing, and then when I look to the other side, it's like all this disaster, and the one thing that I've gotten out of it is you can't stay still. You got to keep moving.
Well, we've let go of the, you know, the, I guess it was Uncle John, the Iroquois elder. He said, there's a river, and he says, you've got to let go of the bank and get out in the middle and just keep your head above water. And that's what you and I are doing, and that's what everybody should be doing right now. Just going with the flow and keeping their heads above water.
And not really knowing how it's going to turn out. That's the interesting thing. It seems like you can, it's like being on an expedition, okay? And I'm going to use that analogy. In that, okay, you have an idea of where you're at, you know why you're here, but you don't know what's going to happen until you take the next step.
Yeah.
You could say, well, you know, we'll do this and this is what's going to happen, but at the same time, the moment that you lift your foot to take the next step, all the circumstances change. And they change to such a dramatic point that everything that we valued life on is being thrown on the table, so to speak, and being tested right in front of our eyes.
And I guess that's what the Eighth Thunder is all about, is the war for valued life that's going on.
Well, yeah, and when I used to talk about the things that were going to happen, you know, people used to look at me with those funny eyes. You know those funny eyes? Like, yeah, I hear what you're saying, but soda stuff is really way out, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And, but now, it's in all the news.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I used to listen to you back when you were on Art Bell with 32 times, or one of the original Art Bells.
Yeah.
And, you know, everybody was going, yeah, sure, okay, yeah. Now we're going.
Yeah, you know, that was really funny. I remember the first time driving home from the studio. And they used to do a replay.
Yeah.
And I guess the family was, you know, listening to it on the radio in the truck.
Mm-hmm.
And because I don't ever play the radio, but I used to always play the tape deck. But I turned on the radio, and it was on, you know. And this is like the very first time, going back to like 94. So it's like 4 o'clock in the morning, you know. I'm driving down from the mountains up in Idaho someplace, and I'm going back to where I lived, which was in Washington over by Spokane at that point. And I'm listening to this guy come on the radio, and I'm going, wow, that's incredible stuff, man. I had no idea for the first 30 seconds it was me. You know, and I was like, wow, man.
Well,
how does he get away with this shit, you know?
Well, you know, that phenomena you're talking about, in some circles, they call that speaking with the spirit, or the spirit speaking through you. It's like your mouth is moving, but even when your mouth is moving, you're thinking, I'm not saying this stuff.
Yeah, or you turn around and you say, did I just say that?
Yeah.
You know, and the thing is, I always say, there's a difference between prophecy and psychic prediction.
Oh, yeah.
Prophecy works through layers, for one thing. Prophecy constitutes a certain intense degree of study and learning. You're working on elements that affect the whole of life. And so you're in an arena which is really 360 in the round. A lot of things can happen. Where psychic prediction is more or less like you're playing. Remember 45?
Oh, yeah.
Well, you know, you put the 45 record on and it drops down. And what the psychic is doing is he's looking at that one moment in time straight ahead in a linear line. Okay? And the prophet's like playing with a multiple CD player. And the reality is you're shifting at a random pace. You don't know which one's going to play next, you know. So it's sort of like predicting in the round versus predicting in a straight line. And again, it's got to do with looking at a much larger picture. than psychic prediction. Psychic prediction, to me, is almost like an intuitive hit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, don't go in a car tonight because you're going to have an accident.
Mm-hmm.
Where the prophet says, you have to stop drinking. You better start getting along with your wife, because if you don't, it's really going to bend things around. It's going to put you in a lousy frame of mind. You're not going to have good perception. And then you could wind up in a whole series of calamities that might end up in an automobile accident.
Conditional as opposed to a stiff warning, you know.
Yeah, and I always remember Grandpa saying, when you give the prophecy, it's telling people you can change this. It doesn't have to be this way, but you have to wake up and do something. You know, and again, the psychic prediction is, tonight you're going to stick your finger in an electric socket and get a shock. You know, and usually, when you tell people something's going to happen, all of a sudden everybody starts talking about it, you know, and then this buzz starts. And then all of a sudden other people see it, you know. And it's like, you know, I get people writing to me sometimes, and they send me things that I talked about, and I go, do you realize who you're sending this to?
Well, it's like the buzz that's going on with the Nephilim right now. I mean, it's all, everybody's talking about it. You were talking about it how long?
Oh, I was talking about it in 94 when they used to call me a son of Satan, because I was I was talking about demons, and I went, you know, like, well, what do you know about those days? What do you know about those times? I mean, you know, what do you really know that you're not parroting to me, you know, from something that you read that somebody told you, and they don't have a clue? You know, for instance, in that time, we had many different species of beings on the earth. If you look at history from a 360 point of view, if you give credibility to the Maya and the Inca, and the Dogon and the Chinese and the Tibetans, if you look at it and the Hindu, and you look at all of this, you know, in a full panorama, you realize that there were all these different things going on, you know, and that a lot of what you hear, biblically speaking, and I'm saying this, and people must understand that I'm an ordained minister. I'm a Christian minister. So the other night I was talking in some show someplace, I think Canada, and somebody called up and said, you're talking about demons, and you're no different than the prophet Yahweh, and you are leading people astray. I said, hey, I haven't said anything. I'm just talking about history here.
Yeah.
You know, you obviously must have a problem with your faith.
Yeah.
I'm just telling you that, you know, this story was told here, this story was told here, this story was told here, and this story was told here. And so we have four different versions that are basically the same story, but it's really interesting how the drama's played out in the different cultures. And, you know, when you're looking at these things and when you start, you know, declaring your own prophecy and you're doing it based on incomplete information, that's really dangerous, man. It's like, you know, walking into a terrorist scene and shooting from the hip, not knowing who's who, because everybody's wearing the same color uniform, you know. You have to know history. You have to know the history of your people, your culture. You have to know this in order to understand where you're going to go. Does that make any sense?
Yep.
I mean, if you're naive about it and all you ever read was the Reader's Digest version of everything that everybody else told somebody, then you won't really understand, because the funny thing is, when these things start to occur, you know, it's almost like the dream gets very unreal, and you're in this surrealistic environment, and you're questioning your own reality, because the with all the predictions that man does, and all of the academians that, you know, have all the honors and all of that stuff, well, you know, when it happens, they realize that there's no control and that only God's in control. And it can look like everything else is supposed to happen this way, and then all of a sudden it plays out in this most dramatic way, and you're speechless, you know, you're just in awe of how, according to logic, it all should have happened this way, so how could this possibly be explained? And you could be doing this for like, you know, 50 years, and that same thing will happen to you. Or all you can do is walk up to the point knowing that your inner being doesn't lie to you, and you come to trust it, which is, you know, and which is the Creator talking through you. I mean, why are we here?
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments. Friends, this is Will Bluewater. Would you think twice about defending yourself or a loved one from an intruder? In this day and age, would you dream of leaving your doors unlocked at night for fear of being burglarized or even attacked or worse? Would you? But when it comes to our own bodies, the doors to our houses are wide open all the time. The very air we breathe and the food we eat, especially here in the United States, creates free radicals that cause us to age and in some cases cause illness, some of which are deadly. Now, for the first time in history, there's a supplement called Protandim that is listed on the U.S. government's PubMed.gov website with many peer-reviewed studies all showing that Protandim is a proven killer of the free radicals that are aging and in some cases even killing us. Now, I'm not talking about killing one molecule of free radical per one molecule of antioxidants like the stuff we've been taking. I'm talking about killing 1 million free radicals per second, per molecule, and this is the very same antioxidant your own body produces. Protandim supercharges your body to create much more than it does without Protandim. There's an old saying that we are warned about in the scriptures. That's the attitude, eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow we die. So let me ask you, how much money do you spend on food a day? If you're out shopping or at the beach, would you think anything of spending a buck or even more on a can of soda? If there was a vending machine that sold something that killed what was aging you or even killing you, would you even hesitate to spend a buck and a half a day? Well, now there is such a vending machine, and it's sitting right in front of you. It's at www.defendyourownbody.com. That's defendyourownbody.com. Visit us now. Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments. Hi, friends. This is Will Bluewater. I have a message here from 1975 from John Wayne. It comes right out of today's headlines. So you Indian folks who are following the progressive trend in politics, you're following the people that supported slavery. You're following the people that have enslaved you ever since the Civil War. Listen to John Wayne.
You know, it's a funny thing, the Indians now, this AIM group have started something that now they're against me for some reason, but I am the only man in pictures that always gave them their human dignity. I never was in a picture. I never allowed myself at any time to do anything that would take their human dignity away from them, and that to me is the most important thing in a man. I have found that a certain type that calls himself a liberal, and I always thought I was a liberal. I came up terribly surprised one time when I found that I was a right-wing conservative extremist. When I have listened to everybody's point of view that I ever met, and then decide how I should feel. I mean, but this so-called new liberal group, Jesus, they never listen to your point of view, and they make a decision as to what you think, and they're articulate enough and in control of enough of the press to force that image out for the average person. For some reason, maybe it's these pictures, they have not been able to do that with me. In spite of what they say, people have not taken sides that I'm a, you know, it hasn't affected my career in popularity, let's say. In spite of the fact that they've tried to make it do it. There isn't a hell of a lot to that we can do to change human behavior. We keep making laws to try and change human behavior. You can't do it. I think you can accept it and feel how you would feel in that position. You're being conned into Keynesianism and socialism now. But it isn't going to stop the selfishness of human behavior. It isn't going to stop the greed. If you give, take $20 and give a dollar to every son of a bitch in a room, and come back a year later, one of the bastards will have most of the money. I mean, it's just human nature, and you're not gonna whip it with a lot of laws. I think when you make people conscious, as communication gets better, and you make people conscious of somebody in trouble, starving or something like that, the average person will help. But of course now they get so damn many charities and there's so much professionalism, you know, there's if you have a charity, you hire some professionals to work up the charity, and by the time you get the money, you get $4 for the recipient and $400 for the administrators. So I mean, Christ, I think there are people who try to affect a thinking where they know more than some other son of a bitch and try to put a false impression on what human nature is. Christ's sakes, we have proven that we go back to hope at the first opportunity. Just throw out a little fish and bam, they're out there ready to grab it. So we are optimistic. We have to be optimistic. Christ, what else would there be in life if you lose optimism?
The Creator talks through us and to us. We can choose not to listen. You know, I always think that Creator's, you know, got a great sense of humor, because either he knocks us totally on our butkus, or he speaks so quietly that we have to go, "What was that?"
Oh, yeah.
You know, but like when we don't listen to that quiet voice.
Yeah.
Welcome to the Cecil B. DeMille version of your life.
Yeah.
It's like, wait a minute, man.
With a cast of thousands.
Yeah, you know. And like, you know, right now we're seeing so many things happen. And the truth of the matter is, and you're well aware of this, you know, and it's wonderful to be able to talk to somebody who's sort of a colleague in the same profession, and especially someone whose predictions I respect. But, you know, we were told, you know, eons ago about this stuff, and especially during the 80s and the 90s, people were traveling all over the world. They were going down to South America and spending, you know, $12,000 a year going to seminars and learning from Robert Goetz-Wolff and Drenpa Lo-Melchizedek and Humboldt's man. They were doing all of these things, and all of a sudden it's like the train derailed. Nobody was doing this anymore, and all the prophets and the messengers disappeared. And yet, what we're seeing is everything play out now exactly the way that we were told.
And the whole thing has become a travel business.
Yeah, it's a, you know, like Power Plays Tours, you know.
Yeah, everybody's going on pilgrimages every few months, you know.
You know, you know, and yeah, they even got it down to where they deliver it in a 90-minute segment, you know,
yeah,
by the tapes, you know. And I remember a lot of the real stories behind some of those things. You know, part of what we will be talking about tonight a little bit is, you know, the Oannes, the fish people. And, you know, I'm almost finished with it, but I have an incredible site that I'm putting together. You know, when you do these things out, they're almost like writing little books.
And this is all about all the myth from all the cultures, including Native American, about the fish people, the mermen and mermaids, and how our origins came from the sea. And, you know, we're seeing now, one of the things that I talked about way back when was that they were going to discover either a city or a very huge complex under the ocean in Antarctica. And again, I saw it. I saw the, you know, little submarine things going down with the cameras and the people. And I saw this, you know, building in blue. It was just like, you know, like you see on the inspirational cards that you get at your local metaphysical store. But there wasn't a date, you know. And so when I first came out with releasing these, which was, I guess, 98, everybody kept saying, well, when is it going to happen? Well, when is it going to happen? Well, just the other day, July 18th, they had an article that was all over the world on UPS and everything, where they have found a man-made structure under the water in Antarctica. And it's causing this whole stir. You know, they're trying to cover it up and get us to watch what's going on with little people blowing up trains.
You think maybe that's what was going on last year with all the comings and goings to Antarctica?
Well, yeah, very much so. Antarctica is a very ancient place. It has, like Shasta, been a place that has been known for intergalactic communication and interaction for centuries by the various cultures around the area. I mean, Antarctica, which is amazing. I mean, even the Greeks talked about Antarctica. You know, I don't know how they figured it out because they didn't have boats with heated cabins.
Plato, yeah. Well, I know last year White Wolf, Darrell White Wolf brought to our attention that that there were a lot of comings and goings of particularly astronomers. And there was he lives in South Australia, and one of the military bases down there was renamed Wormwood, and there was all kinds of civilian and military personnel coming and going, and a lot of rumors going on. And then they had the release in the Russian press about some kind of weird vortex, tornadic cloud of some kind that they sent weather balloons up into, and their chronometers came back returning earlier than when they went in. And there's all kinds of weird goings on down there last year. And, of course, President Clinton, you know, coming back and, you know, making the comment that if something wasn't done, he made the comment in New Zealand that something wasn't done, that you know, most of the islands of the sea could go underwater soon.
Uh-huh.
Just a lot of dramatic stuff going on.
Well, look at the heat waves that we're having right now.
Oh yeah.
I mean, you know, it's now international news that, you know, 2/3 of the United States has been in the triple digits now for 10 days in a row.
Oh yeah, the Upper Missouri River is just drying up. They've got saw a picture of a marina up on the Upper Missouri that's about a mile away from where the water is now.
Mm-hmm.
what's happening?
You know, and I talked a lot about Antarctica in my first book, actually, Days of Destiny. Days of Destiny. Last Cry. Mm-hmm. Native American Tale, Prophecy, and Other Tales of the End Times. And I spoke about a lot of things that people were not aware of that were going on down there. And, you know, the Nazi development toward the end of the war, and the fact that, you know, so many of the ex-Nazi hierarchy disappeared, and they went to two places, Otter. They were either brought into the United States and set up as the heads of corporations and given, you know, fine homes in Upper Brookville and Bay Shore and the Hamptons and Long Island.
Operation Paperclip.
They went down towards South America, South America. Many of them wound up in Argentina. The Boys of Brazil was a fictional story based upon real facts.
And there was all sorts of goings on at the end of the war around Antarctica. And there was the development of massive underground complexes by cooperative work between everyone, meaning the Third Reich, the Italians, the English, the French, the Americans. You know, this was like this place where they were all working together. I always thought that was strange, you know.
Yeah, and I remember seeing maps of Antarctica that that it was split into, if viewed from the above the South Pole, Antarctica was split internationally into zones, and everybody and nobody owned it. It was an international zone.
Uh-huh.
I always thought that was weird. Looked like big pieces, evenly spaced pieces of the pie.
Wow.
With about 90 pieces to it. It was really strange. I haven't seen that map since the 60s, but I kind of got the idea that it was an international zone of some kind.
Yeah, yeah. So it's been that way for some time. And, you know, in my books, there's not enough time here to go into all of it, but I touch on all the different places and stories and cultures that were tied into there, the biblical declarations that came out of the sacred texts. I tend to not read the Bible. I tend to read that which the Bible was taken from. You know, the Bible is more or less a new publication that has been edited several times.
Particularly the New Testament.
Oh, yeah. And you know, the last Bibles that we can rely on as somewhat clearly defining what people knew a couple of centuries ago, and any Bible that was done after 1938 has been totally altered and has had massive portions like the Apocrypha just taken out. It's not there because it dealt with the future and it dealt with spirits and it dealt with demons, and it dealt with extraterrestrials, and it dealt with prophecy of things that would happen, and, you know, it's like, we got to keep the people barefoot and pregnant, okay? And we don't want them to know this stuff, because then we'll lose the power of the priesthood, you know? So I've seen that, but if people go into and get a hold of a copy of Last Cry, there's, like, whole portions of the book, including military historical photos that back up everything that we're talking about all the weird stuff that was happening down there by us. Not some off-planet culture, okay? So it's always interesting, you know? It's like you have to come out with this stuff and then you disappear for a couple of years and come back. And then all of a sudden you go, yeah, okay, right on, you know? And that's the whole thing, you know, by not focusing on time. And I think we started off by saying about the danger of prophets putting a time thing on it. Well, it's like, it's scary sometimes to come out with a prophecy, especially if it's one that you dream several times, you know is going to happen, and you come out with it. And, well, what you're going to do is you're going to put the attention of consciousness on it, right?
Yeah.
And you may put the attention of those that are trying to make it happen, and you don't want that. It's like they'll know the gig's up because you know about it, and then they have time to change the script. I've always thought about that. What if we didn't tell them about this particular thing that was going to happen, and we just let it happen?
Yeah.
What would they do? It's almost like we're preparing them, because I know that they're listening to the things that we say, regardless of what they say about us, regardless of the propaganda and the defamation of character campaigns and all that other stuff, because everything that we talked about 10, 15, 20 years ago, you know, if I go over to the Christian channels with Pat Robinson and all those guys, well, they're all being sold on video now.
Yeah, yeah.
$29.99, you can get all this about the end times and the days that are coming. And yet when we did it, we were run out of town, tarred and feathered,
yeah.
And told that we were heathens. And
Pat Robertson used to say that if anybody believed in UFOs, I ought to be beheaded. And
yeah, I remember that.
But
well, I was just looking on the UN website. They have something called the Law of the Sea and Antarctica. So apparently Antarctica is under what they used to call Admiralty Law. It's now the Law of the Sea.
Uh-huh.
And which is a completely different system of law than we're familiar with here. So it definitely is under international law, which is the law of the sea, basically.
So, where do you want to go from here? You want to go into these prophecies? You want to talk about them?
Well, you've got a lineup here of things.
I got over 100 prophecies.
Right? They're numbered, you know, if you want to. What have you seen? Well, you know
what that came out of? That came out of when I would talk on the radio and do things and go to these whole life expos and things. People would say, well, we came here to prophecies, and he talked for an hour and a half, and he only told us three. So I said, okay, by God, here you go.
Why don't we do this? Why don't we just say that folks can click on your picture, and they can visit the website possibly while they're listening. It'll open up a separate page so it won't interfere with the flow of the show. But why don't you touch the highlights about fulfillments that you've seen, say just in the past 2-3 months.
Okay. I'm going to have to go back to where I was when I wrote these things.
What kind of stuff is Rob McConnell? You've been on the Rob McConnell's X Zone here quite a bit this last month or two. What kind of things have been coming up? Any more news about the Sasquatch? I know other than the claim in Oklahoma. There are other claims of people.
Well, I have some claims right now with some pictures that were sent to me that I have hesitated to put up on the website.
Well, that'd be a good
But, you know, they definitely look authentic.
Like what?
They look authentic.
Oh, yeah.
But they're supposed to be in this particular area of Canada where I found some giant skulls and the cone heads.
Yeah.
But I'm looking at the trees and I'm going, the trees don't look right.
Well, are you aware of the recent finds of fully articulated skeletons in caves that are underwater in the Yucatan they're calling them pre-Clovis. In other words, you're going back 10, 13,000 years. They're dolichocephalic skulls.
Yeah, well, I was never one to go along with the Clovis theory. The Clovis theory tends to, in my opinion, talk about nomadic aboriginal people that were very low-skilled, low in consciousness and awareness. And the fact of the matter is, it denies a whole segment of our population because everything's always, you know, if we're still being ruled by the Western European, you know, we're the ones who know everything. We're the ones who created all of this.
Right.
And we know everything about Egypt and Tibet and everybody, so you got to come and check it with us. And my thing is, you know, excuse me, but what the heck do you know?
Well, these skulls are dolls.
And unless you've walked with the Mayan, you know, and you've gone to the ancient temples down there and you've seen the things, unless you've done a vision quest, unless you've done these things,
right,
unless you've been in the jungle and talked to the Dogon and can explain some of the things to me, unless you've been to Australia and can explain some of the Egyptian hieroglyphs that I've seen in caves and on rocks, then you don't know the story. You don't know the story. And the fact is that there were these incredible civilizations all along, you know, and they never connected. Do you know what I'm saying? They never connect the Inca to the Clovis people. They never connect the Mayan and the philosophy and the Chilambalam and the Popol Vuh and all these incredible, incredible writings and knowledge that they had. They never connected to what they say was going on. So
when we look at archaeology and anthropology through the academician eyes and they come up with the Clovis theory, what it is everybody was a dumb aboriginal running around eating bugs, chasing rabbits, and wearing skin. Okay?
What they're saying is these skeletons, and there's two of them that have been found.
Okay, this is in the Yucatan, though.
They were in the Yucatan. They're now underwater. They predate the Maya by at least 5,000 years.
Uh-huh.
And they are dolichocephalic, which means they are long-headed instead of round-headed, so they're more like the skull that, say, would have come out of Egypt
right,
and so forth. And
well, I'm going to say this about that.
Go back 1,000 years.
We're out of time anyway. I mean, you know, it's all about to come down. So, the history of the world that I understand it, and the history of humanity, you know, is quite diversified, but essentially, you had an original Earth race.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments.
It is so great to have our friend Marie Osman back here on GMA, and she has some important information about making sure your family is prepared for natural disaster. She's the new national spokesperson for Wise Company, which makes dehydrated and freeze-dried emergency foods and food storage products. She's here to tell us about that. Marie, you've been given the opportunity to endorse probably 9 billion things over the course of your career.
True.
Why the Wise Company?
The reason I wanted to do it is because it's affordable. You can eat a meal for a dollar. It's less than school lunch. It's affordable, but really, look at what's been going on with Sandy and Katrina. I mean, what was it, $78 billion of damage done just here in New York and
right.
New Jersey.
So what is this?
What it is it's emergency meals, and you know, it's not your grandmother's kind, not the beans and rice and the gross chicken tasting garbage. This is lasagna and really good stuff, and I swear to you, why am I here talking about this? Because I know it's going to save thousands and thousands and thousands of lives. You put it under your bed, it's convenient, stick it in your closet. If something happens, I have it in my car. All you do is you open it and you add water. You don't even have to add hot water.
Right.
And it's affordable, it's convenient, it tastes really good. Taste the peaches, they're fantastic.
This is a peach?
But they're different than every other company because it's like dehydrated, and freeze-dried, and they combine whatever. I swear it's fantastic. Just try it.
I'm trying it right now, Marie
Osman.
Put it
under your bed, put it in your closet, give it for Christmas to people, and save lives.
Thank you very much. Will you tell Donnie that we said we hope his rear feels better?
Well, you know, it's kind of a bummer, but I'll tell him.
No, Marie Osman, great having you on.
It's
the Wise
so fun
Company.
To be here.
Great to be with you.
It's always fun to be here. This is a great place.
All right.
Friends, this is Will Bluewater. If you'd like to find out more about Wise Foods, visit wisefoods.org.
So what happens is most people, when they're looking at the picture of history, anthropology, and how the human species developed and everything, they're playing with a 49-card deck instead of a 52-card deck. Because there are things that they don't have. Nobody talks about the Asur people. No one talks about the Vanar people. No one talks about the Arctical races and the tropical races. No one talks about that part of history. And yet we're finding things now, you know, off Cuba. We're finding things, you know, it started with me with the Miami Circle. And before the Miami Circle, I knew what the Miami Circle was for two reasons. Number one, I was intimately connected to the Maya. And I was also very well connected through Shoshana, through a fellow by the name of Dr. David Zink. Now, Dr. David Zink was an English teacher, professor, who on his own got a sailboat and realized one time when he was down in the Bahamas that there were some really strange things here that needed to be investigated and to be clarified. And he found the Bimini Road and many of those things and many other circles like the Miami Circle in his years. And yet, you know, his work is almost unspoken of. And yet he's an incredible individual who came up with the facts, the pictures, did the underwater stuff back in the days when they had to wear snorkels and everything was like Mike Nelson and Sea Hunt, you know. It wasn't as sophisticated with the bathysphere and the little things. They didn't have that back then. So it was like, you know, jump over the side and bring your camera, you know, put it inside a plastic bag. And so some of the pictures didn't come out too clearly because of the ways that they had to work in those days, which is why we have developed the high technology that we have today to overcome some of the setbacks that they went through. But this guy found pillars and roads and buildings all over the place. The Mayans told me all about the circles going all the way up through Tennessee, up into the Ohio River country, and down that you know, up by the Spiral Mound.
Yeah.
And that highway that's up there. Here's this incredible highway, you know, which is like 32 feet wide in some places, with these giant stones just laid there, you know. The people who settled North America, for the most part, they were enterprising, yes, but for the most part, they did not have education. They did not know or have any need to preserve many of these things that they came across. They simply plowed under them, took the rocks, made a foundation for the barn, you know, or built a road over them, or just built a city over them. So a lot of these things were, and especially the 19th century, were just wiped out, okay? But yet there's this incredible history that will not go away, that goes back, all the way back, you know, to a people called Hyperboron, okay? And we had all of these cultures, and these cultures were expressed. The Greeks didn't, you know, you didn't go to college in Athens and study history. You went to a college in Athens, and you studied philosophy and mythology. Mythology, my story. History, his story. Okay? So Aristotle and Plato and these guys would come up, and they would discuss with you mythology. This is my story. Okay? Native Americans, in the same aspect, you know, were not recognized or respected for their oral tradition. You know, well, I was stupid. Everything has to be written down in a word. But, you know, the belief and the philosophy behind why they didn't is an incredible justification for truth. Because they knew, even before everything came down over here in the Great Conquest, they knew that words can change and things that are written down and the interpretations of them can change over time based upon where consciousness is, based upon who's looking at them, based upon the knowledge or lack of knowledge that they have when they look at them. For how many hundreds of years did we call ancient writings and things that we have right here in plain sight, okay, all over the rocks and things in America, did we call it rock art?
Yeah.
You know, it's like, give me a break. They knew these ancient languages because, I mean, I'm one of the guys who's brought it out to public attention. That there was maybe 14, 16 different ancient languages all over the rocks out here in the West that aren't supposed to be here. And they are, in fact, languages. Okay?
Right, like the one that the Dr. Hawass swore that, you know, came from Egypt and came from southwestern United States.
Oh, yeah, that was the stuff that Daniel Brinkley brought over. And he was going over there saying, hey, Zowie, look. And Zowie goes, those are stolen artifacts.
Yeah.
And he says, well, I don't know how they were stolen by Robert Ghostwolf in Colorado. But, you know, so I was expecting the Egyptian police to come up at any moment.
Yeah, right. Interpol.
You know, so, you know, but it was okay because my passport is not stamped with Egypt, so they're going to have to explain that.
All right.
But we have all of these things here. And, you know, when you get into all of these cultures and all of our pre-cultures that were here, the cultures that are forgotten, there are more cultures that were here in the Americas that are absolutely incredible that have been absolutely just written off. They do not talk about them. They don't acknowledge them. You go up on the Internet, you can't even find them, okay? Because they didn't fit with the prescribed program. And the prescribed program comes out of the European antique dealers and the rich, who are usually the ones who fund the archaeological and anthropological expeditions, because it takes an enormous amount of money. And they, again, for so many years, didn't have the means of communication that we have. I mean, we could discover something tomorrow, and technically, I can put it up on the web and take pictures right from a site, and within seconds, people can see it in China, Japan, Siberia, Russia, France, Germany, Jersey, and Yucatan, okay? Where it took even 10 years ago, 15 years ago, so many days, weeks, and hours of just traveling around trying to communicate and find out different things. If you wanted to send pictures of a piece over to England to have the British Museum decipher something, well, if you had the right connections, you might get into the right doors where people would give you a truthful decipherment of what it was you put before them. Otherwise, if it was something that was unusual, it was told, we know nothing about it. That's not our area of expertise.
Yep.
But today, I can send something to Solange. He can email it over to his connections over in the British Museum or the Belgian Museum and go, oh, you know, here's some other things, Robert, that look quite like this. Where did you find this? I mean, so now it happens in minutes. Okay? And even with that, you know how many thousands of hours of reading and understanding, because everything's all convoluted. And usually our reference sources are not genuine in that we listen to what, you know, Jose Aguirre had to say about the Mayan. Why not go to the Mayan? Because, you know, or you have this other guy from England, well, his name escapes me, but like, here's a guy who listened to an interpretation by an interpreter from somebody who wasn't even a Mayan that spoke to a Mayan because they were both speaking in Spanish. And now I'm looking at it and I'm writing it down as the all-conclusive end of this Mayan prophecy, and it's got nothing to do with anything. It was like that time that we had Humbats on the air, and he said, well, we showed him 2,300 artifacts, and he wrote the book based on 23. I mean, that was all he had to say, which is about all you have to say. You have to look at the entire picture. You can't just look at two pieces and say, well, this is what this is about. So, you know, people like me are not blessed by academia and scholars. At the same time, we're becoming quite an annoyance now in that we have the technology to prove what we're saying and what we're seeing, even though we might not know the total story, doesn't jive with their rendition of how it's supposed to have happened. The dates don't work. It's like, you know, Mayan temples. Well, you know, this was 600 years ago in the Yucatan that they built this. And you're looking at the limestone, you're looking at the character of the building, you're looking at the degradation of the building, and you're going, this is not 600 years old, this is more like 20,000 years old. See what I'm saying?
Yep.
And so we get into that and we find out, wow, you know? And so the wonderful part about it is it's stretching dates and tearing down illusions. It's telling us that we had high culture here in the Western Hemisphere thousands of years before the Europeans did, those bunch of barbarians running around the desert killing each other and eating each other's children. They had temples and they had sciences here that they're still trying to figure out in NASA.
Yeah.
They're still trying to figure out how to get from here to there. And we had temples all over the place where they came from there and they came down and interacted with us. They interacted with us. They intermixed with us. We had hybrid children by them. Their children mixed with our children. When you listen to the Mayan story of the War of the Heavens or the War of the Gods, which comes into alignment with the story of Horus declaring war upon Jehovah, Enlil Jehovah, because of the murder of his father Osiris, and you listen to the ancient stories from the civilized tribes here, you realize that, well, wait a minute, this is the same story as this. And, you know, and wow, and how could Kukulkan be the same figure that they call Thoth in Egypt? But he taught the same things here. So when you leave yourself open to the possibility, which a scientist is supposed to do, and you realize, well, you know, the story is much bigger, much older, and this story is actually much more intact. And what I've heard from elders here, from the Mayan, from the Inca, from Cherokee, there's much more information than we got from all the fragments of pieces of things that were then edited to fit into the propaganda and the faith of the European domination of world consciousness. And I frankly think it's about time.
Yeah.
You know, it's about time that they understood that the sciences that the Mayans worked with here were hundreds, maybe thousands of years ahead of where they were. They were into interplanetary travel and communication before we even knew the world wasn't flat. Okay? And the writings are there. They're written in stone, you know. They're not just written on a piece of paper. And there's more things intact here than there will ever be over in the Middle East because of all the wars.
Yeah.
All of the wars. They knew the Spanish were coming. They knew the Spanish were coming long before, because it was foretold by Quetzalcoatl, and it's talked about in the Chilambalam and the Popovu.
Right.
And they took everything and they hid it, and they hid it in the mountains, and they were, because he warned them that this destruction would come. And unless they did these things, there would be nothing left for prosperity for future generations when the awakening came, which is where we are now. We are in the awakening.
They know right down to the shape of their hats and what they'd be carrying, the unbalanced cross. They knew the shape of their hats.
Yeah, that's right.
They knew the symbol.
They knew the cross. And you know, there are many things that I have read in the journals of Cortez's men, his captains. You know, you go down to the Mexican Museum and stuff's all there, where they talked about how they would come upon a group of natives that would come parading out to them with crosses, okay?
Yeah.
Sort of like, what was his name? The Cheyenne chief who was given the American flag.
Oh.
And he was told, put this in front of your teepees and the army won't destroy you. Black Kettle.
Black Kettle.
And so Black Kettle comes out, he wears the top hat that he wore to Washington and the medal that was given to him by the president, and he puts the flag out, and that was Sand Creek, the Sand Creek Massacre.
Yeah.
And the Colorado regulars come in and just destroyed everybody, okay? So they were told by the prophet to show them the cross, to let them know that they understood. So they came out with these crosses, they came out with statuary that was representative of Quetzalcoatl, the Pale Prophet, the ones that they called their Christ, okay? And it was, and they were immediately by the black robes annihilated and everything destroyed.
You ever notice Diani Yahu?
Okay.
You know, she's, claims to be, I have no doubt, I think a 32nd generation descendant of the Pale One. And if you've got to understand that the Cherokee God has the same name as the Hebrew God. But I never realized here until recently that surname that she's using is actually probably a name that the Pale One was using at the time. Yahweh. Yahoo.
Well, he had so many names, you know, that they change also with each culture and each region that he walked into.
Yeah.
But they all basically come down to either the pale prophet, or mostly the Lord of the Wind and Sea.
Wind and water, right?
Okay. Mostly Lord of the Wind and Sea. And his manner of dress, the robes he wore, the crosses he had on his robes, they all overlay. You know, and even the Paiute in the ghost dance, you know, one of the symbols of the ghost dance was the cross within the hand, the palm of the hand.
That's right, they call it the hand.
The red cross within the palm of the hand.
Hand Kabul.
And that was, you know, because
Wovoka was invoking by instruction, preparing an environment for the appearance of Kanichiwa Kanichita and the Great White Chief. And they were supposed, and you know, and they did appear. As a matter of fact, in the Boston Globe, in the archives, authenticated with little excerpts and sayings from General Miles, of all people, he talks about some of the strange things that happened. Mm-hmm. Like the orange cloud that covered everybody for 4 days, the descent from the orange cloud that looked like someone was walking down a scaffolding of a man in white robes who obviously must have been a missionary because he spoke to all the people, and they all seemed to, although they came from many tribes, they understood him.
In their own language.
I mean, it's like, you know, okay.
That's the real gift.
I think he missed something, Miles.
That's the real gift of tongues.
You know.
You talk and they understand in their own language.
That's right. And
something similar happened to the Tana Islanders back in the 20s or 30s. They had a visitor named, they called him John From or John Come.
I'll see you.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments.
It's the little yellow pill that scientists say could eliminate chronic diseases and help you live well into your hundreds.
You might be able to increase the lifespan of a mammal by 50%. And, of course, if that was a human being, then that might be in the order of 130 to 150 years.
That claim might be hard to swallow, but tonight on ABC's Primetime Live, co-anchor John Quinones takes the promising antioxidant therapy called Protandim.
I have become a guinea pig for ABC News and Primetime. It's not a drug. It's a supplement. It's called Protandim, and it's a combination of five exotic plants that have been around for centuries.
Have you discovered the fountain of youth?
I wouldn't put it that way, but we may have discovered something that will tell us a lot more about how we age, what happens biochemically, and maybe how we can slow it down.
Quinones has been taking Protandim for 2 weeks now and tells Extra,
I am sleeping better. I feel a lot better and also energized when I do wake up.
Primetime puts Protandim to the test tonight.
It's at www.defendyourownbody.com. That's defendyourownbody.com. Visit us now.
And their description of him was almost word for word, like Wovoka is describing their visitor, and basically taught him the same thing. Do not listen to the Europeans. Keep your own religion and wait for me to return. Pretty simple.
Yes, it was. He also spoke about crystal cities, which now we would interpret as glass and steel.
Mm-hmm.
He talked about these things towering over the land. He talked about the incredible bridges that would be everywhere, connecting everything. He talked about the intensity of the degree of population that would be a thousandfold.
You can't
anything
find,
they could imagine.
You can't find any of this on the net, and it's. I wish you had a photocopy of that of those Boston Globe archives, because it would sure shed a lot more light on it.
Well, I have to go in and find it again. But it's one of those things that's way back hidden in the dark rooms with all the dust and the spiders and a little mice.
Yeah, right.
You know, on microfish, you know.
Yeah.
And they make it difficult to find it, and most people who you go in and you if you were to ask for, you know, directions, they would look at you with this complete blank stare.
Uh-huh.
So you sort of have to know what you're looking for.
Right.
But they're there. I mean, the stuff didn't just come out of the air. It's just like, you know, the story about, you know, the crosses and the statuary of the Christ. Well, that didn't come out of the air. It came out of the journals of Cortez's captains, okay?
Yep.
And also the fact that the black robes were collecting everything they could collect about medicine and technology and sending it all back to the Vatican.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I mean, if you want to know where the ancient texts are from the Mayan and the Inca and all their stuff about medicine and surgery and all this advanced stuff that they were doing, they're in the Vatican. You know, of all places. And, you know, I can just imagine that. These guys sitting there with their little sandals, you know, in brown robes going, what in the heck could this mean? You know. But they're all there.
The Dead Sea Scrolls, because the Dead Sea Scrolls, they've got things that are coming out. I've been talking about Dead Sea Scroll 4QMMT and some of the revelations that have come out on it, you know, regarding the man that we call Jesus. And what a mess the Romans made of that whole deal, and how they've what a raw deal the Jews got in the process.
Okay, I have a question. If we're going to go on with some of these things, we have to try to talk, because some people will have the ability to come into my website or your website and click on and go to the Eighth Thunder Prophecy.
All I got to do is just click on your...
And see the images, okay? But some of them won't, so we're going to have to try to talk the pictures out.
You bet.
Now, we have to understand what we're about to go into. Originally, I believe it was 1982, up in Taos, New Mexico. And it was originally called the Rainbow Walk. And what it was about was, you know, it didn't have anything to do with what they think rainbow means today. But the Rainbow Walk had to do with, you know, a nation without borders. And it had to do with all of the tribes gathering for, in their way, it was a giant ecumenical council talking about the prophecies of the future. And they did gather, and Grandfather Martin brought the Hopi tablets up there. Later in life, he would be ostracized for that by the so-called Hopis in the tribal council, who, for the most part, if anybody knew the story of that tribal council, would realize that they have about as much authenticity as being Hopi tribal council as a bunch of Polish guys.
Yeah.
And, you know, the original Hopi Sinem that came from Old Oriabi and the priesthood and the elders who held all this stuff, well, that's been in contest since 1906.
Yep.
And they're still fighting it. They've been fighting it for years. Hopis are not, you know, terrorists, or they're not Apaches, for crying out loud. And they're peaceful people, which is what Hopi means, the peaceful ones.
Yeah.
They have watched their land be desecrated. They have watched their teachings be desecrated by indigenous people and white folk alike, okay?
Yeah.
So it's a real messy story, even today. The Hopi Sinem, for the most part, is ostracized, it is criticized, it is threatened constantly whenever they come out with anything contrary to what the tribal council, and the tribal council, you know, it all had to do with this meeting at the Indian agent's house. The Hopi didn't come, which he didn't understand it. That's the way Hopi are. If they don't agree, they just don't show up.
Yeah, that's right.
And if they don't show up, that means it's not going to happen.
Yeah.
So he had six guys sitting around. One guy was taking care of the horses. The other guy was cleaning a latrine. The other guy was out in the fields. Who knows what the other guys were at. And he turned around and he said, okay, you're the Hopi Council. That's basically the way the story went down.
Well, you know, the Indian Reorganization Act, you know, the law was passed. And the law said, well, if you don't agree with what we're saying here, we don't hear from you, we're going to assume that you accept it. And, you know, that's how the Hopi got under the IRA. You know, the Navajo wrote back and said, we're going to keep our own form of government. And they still have it. They have an unwritten constitution. But the Hopi, they're stuck with this tribal council. They were never a tribe. They were villages. They were all sovereign. And, you know, the tribal council's got a lot of Mormons on it.
Mm-hmm. Well, if they weren't Mormons, they were Episcopalians in the beginning.
There was another...
But
But, you know, it doesn't pay to go backwards. It doesn't pay to go backwards because it doesn't solve anything. I mean, I remember Martin telling me stories about when he was a little kid and he was put on a train and he was sent hundreds of miles away to go to an Indian school, and they cut his hair and they made him wear white man's clothes, and if they spoke their own language, they took a hot poker out of the stove and burnt their tongues, or they burnt their backs. They were beaten, they were starved. If they mentioned anything about their parents or their culture, they're terrible things, you know. I mean, they would just come into a household and take the kids away, bingo, you know, sort of like the Gestapo.
This is Martin Gesheshelma.
Yeah, Grandfather Martin.
Yeah, he's one of the few still alive.
Yep. Now, one of the things that I'd like to talk about, you have access to the site now, right?
Yep.
Okay, if we scroll down a little bit, and I'm going to put a preface in front of it, we come down to a thing that says, we have never been alone.
Mm-hmm. There's that picture of that bas relief from it looks like old...
it's old Babylon. Samaria.
Right.
Now, there are many, many stories. This is sort of put in here because these are pictures that this race put up that was not Hopi. They were not Algonquin. They were not Athabascan. You know, they were not Cherokees. They came from the Middle East. But it goes back to Chief Dan's last prophecy, the last Hopi prophecy. And the last Hopi prophecy which he gave out, because there's really been nothing since Dan passed come out. You know that. And that's because he was the high priest. So he was the one that approved what could come out, what people could talk about, and what they couldn't. And the Hopi are very rigid about following their social order. So there's a lot of things that you may go up and find somebody, and they know, and they know about it, but they can't talk about it because it's not their information. It's not their book, so to speak. It's not what they're allowed to talk about because each one has a different segment.
Yeah, from what I understand from talking with Dottie, who's a close friend of Chief Mike's daughter, there is no longer a Kikmongwe or a village chief or old Oraibi because there's no male of the right clan.
Yes.
So everything's just kind of falling apart.
So this has got to do with ancient Babylonian records, which we owe a lot to Zechariah Sitchin for getting the weird truth out. He's sort of the grandfather.
Yeah.
But even he has trouble dealing with the new perceptions of how this all comes together, because what people have to understand when they're listening to Zechariah, they're listening to a Jew who claims heritage going all the way back to Abraham.
Uh-huh.
So he's sort of bound by his own religious dogma.
Yeah, well...
Although he's come out with things that, you know, other people have never come out with.
Well, that's where Abraham came from, in that area.
And, you know, we've been engaged in conversations, him, Lawrence Gardner, and it's like... Zechariah was able to say, it's not my area of expertise.
I'll go... Oh.
But the writings are Sumerian. What is your area of expertise?
Well, there is no other area in the world that's written about more in the Bible than that area, what's now called Babylon. Or
yeah, but what they have a problem with, Otter, is that we have many, many, many artifacts, and you've seen some of the photographs and stuff that I've documented that come from here.
Yeah.
They're not supposed to come from here,
uh-huh.
But they are. So these tablets... Talk about those who came from Orion, Sirius, Andromeda, and the Pleiades, and they were administered to, and under the rule of, for a period of time, the Nephilim. Now, we see in this first tablet, we're looking at, in the center we see some sort of energy device. It could be like a Tesla coil sitting on a pillar.
Yeah.
And from it, we're seeing all these electromagnetic or, you know, who knows what kind of energy it actually was.
It's like a big horseshoe, but it's with a real long, like a horseshoe with long forks.
Right. And then on either side of it, we see these priests who are wearing
looks like fishes over their body, like a fish cape, like you'd wear a Cheyenne would wear a wolf cape to a ceremony. And then we also see them holding, which I've always found really interesting, is they all have these little Sony Walkmans.
Well, iPods.
These little bags, you know, like, what is in the bag, okay? Well, that's a long, drawn-out explanation, but basically, it's a combination of herbs, metal, royal metal, ormus, and salt, okay? They needed that to perpetuate their manifestation in this plane and in the physical. Because they originally were the dolphin people that came from the sea, and what we know as humanity, for the most part, it appears there were two factions involved in the development of humanity as we sort of see it today. One was the Sirians, and one was the Andromedans. The Andromedans were very tall. They were very human-like. The Sirians, and they basically took place of the bot embodiment. Okay? Mm-hmm. That was their guardianship. And the Sirians came from Sirius, which is a watery planet. It's 90% water. Okay?
The closest planet to us, but...
So they were referred to as the fish people, or, you know, the actual term was Oannes, O-A-N-N-E-S. And, you know, later on they became the dolphin people, but it had the fish. Now, I think it's incredible, especially if you look at some of the Sumerian symbolisms and drawings and carvings of that day that were not so sophisticated, but their symbol of the fish is the exact same symbol that the Christians first used to designate a Christian organization, a Christian place, the little fish.
The Ixus.
The little, I called it, diamond-shaped fish.
You know? Yeah, you see it on cars, you see it all over the place.
Yeah.
It was a secret symbol for, you know, hey, Christians, we're here, you know, meet us by the bell tower or whatever, you know.
Yeah, and so we have on either side of this device two of these fish people. Above their heads we have some sort of a winged solar disk, which is actually a ship, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But we'll get into that, and you'll be able to see it a little bit here.
You see also similar on the Egyptian panel.
Yes, you do. The solar disk, which is usually, the solar disk is replaced in Egypt by the scarab,
mm-hmm.
the beetle, because the beetle represented eternal life and had strange colors on it from the universe, you know. On either side of those little fish guys, we have two Anunnaki, okay? Two Anunnaki administrating and governing them over this process. As we look toward the left portion of the picture, we see this little star symbol, which is their symbol for starship, literally, Orion starship. And we notice that the Anunnaki don't have beards, okay? But if you go over to the guy to the left of that star, he's taller than the others, and he's got a beard. Okay? He is a Nephilim. He's holding in his hands a lizard. Showing that the lizard is the cross between the Nephilim and the Anunnaki. And the Anunnaki were, of course, a reptilian race. Okay? And to the left of the Nephilim is a rocket.
There it is.
I mean, it's a Titan rocket. I wasn't funny they called it a Titan rocket, but because Titan, of course, was the son of, okay, what a time to go into a mind blank. He was the son of the king of the sea, Poseidon.
Poseidon, right.
But Poseidon was man-like, he had two legs. But his son was part man, part fish. He was a merman. Okay? And his son was Titan. And Titan is part man, part fish. So we're looking at this and I'm going, that's curious. But if that is not a rocket,
what in the world would they have had that was that? So it's a little like looking at some of the ancient Egyptian things where we saw helicopters and things like that. If we come down to the next pictures, we see some blow-ups. Remember I spoke about that flying disc symbol above the energy machine between the two fish guys.
Couldn't quite make out what was in the blow-up, though. So.
Well, you go in the blow-up.
Teeny little figures.
We can see on the one on the left, there's the symbol of the starship, the star of many rods.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And right next to it, we see seven little balls. Seven little stars,
mm-hmm, Pleiades,
which are the Pleiades, and we right below the Pleiades we have a rocket. Okay, that's interesting. Sitting on the back of a ram, and then we have this like really weird guy. Now we're moving on the bottom toward the right. This really weird guy wearing this helmet with all sorts of feathers and things. Okay, and again on both sides of that energy machine are the. One is a fish guy, and the other guy is an Anunnaki.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments.
It is so great to have our friend Marie Osmond back here on GMA, and she has some important information about making sure your family is prepared for natural disaster. She's the new national spokesperson for Wise Company, which makes dehydrated and freeze-dried emergency foods and food storage products. She's here to tell us about that. Marie, you've been given the opportunity to endorse probably 9 billion things over the course of your career.
True.
Why the Wise Company?
The reason I wanted to do it is because it's affordable. You can eat a meal for a dollar. It's less than school lunch. It's affordable, but really, look at what's been going on with Sandy and Katrina. I mean, what was it, $78 billion of damage done just here in New York and
right.
New Jersey.
So what is this?
What it is it's emergency meals, and you know, it's not your grandmother's kind, not the beans and rice and the gross chicken tasting garbage. This is lasagna and really good stuff, and I swear to you, why am I here talking about this? Because I know it's going to save thousands and thousands and thousands of lives. You put it under your bed, it's convenient, stick it in your closet. If something happens, I have it in my car. All you do is you open it and you add water. You don't even have to add hot water.
Right.
And it's affordable, it's convenient, it tastes really good. Taste the peaches, they're fantastic.
This is a peach?
But they're different than every other company because it's like dehydrated. And freeze-dried, and they combine whatever. I swear it's fantastic. Just try it.
I'm trying it right now, Marie
Osmond.
Put
it under your bed, put it in your closet, give it for Christmas to people, and save lives.
Thank you very much. Will you tell Donnie that we said we hope his rear feels better?
Well, you know, it's kind of a bummer, but I'll tell him.
No, Marie Osmond, great having you on.
It's
the Wise
so fun
Company.
To be here.
Great to be with you.
It's always fun to be here. This is a great place.
All right.
Friends, this is Will Bluewater. If you'd like to find out more about Wise Foods, visit wisefoods.org.
Okay. And then we look up at the ship. And we see it right above a half, a crescent moon symbol, which is upside down, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Or, for all intents and purposes, it's upside down. And that means it's descending, it's not ascending, okay? And then we see these little figures up sitting on this ship. Well, if you go over to the right, there it is. There's three guys. The guy in the middle is wearing some sort of a crazy top hat, looks like. The figure to his left could be Aboriginal or an African. It's obviously some sort of native kind of person, maybe even representative of the Dogon tribe, but I'm putting that in it, okay? It's obviously not a bearded Sumerian, okay? And the figure to his right, well, is sort of got this little pith helmet on. Could be a small beard. He could be Mongolian. He could be, you know, Oriental.
Yep.
But the guy in the middle is definitely long-nosed with a big, tall hat. That looks like a giant top hat, like you used to see in those 1930 movies.
Mm-hmm.
So that's telling me that there were guys that came down to Earth to administer the knowledge or whatever of whatever it is they're talking about here. So I just thought that was a really interesting thing.
Well, why do you think the Jews are so dead set against the religious system that...
Well, they're not actually. In that, if you go into their own explanations of the six-pointed star,
yeah,
their own explanations bring it all the way back to ancient times, ancient cultures, and that it was the symbol that was worn by the highest of initiates.
Yeah.
As above, so below. Alpha, Omega.
Yeah.
And it's part of the principle of the Kabbalah, you know, and actually this little energy thing that we're looking at, most of the time, that is shown as the Tree of Life or the Kabbalah.
Maybe what happened was that after the Nephilim left, that the humans that were left in charge started
doing their own version.
Yeah, and that's probably what they were revealing, knowing you know what we know about cycles and the way things happen. It's probably the priests that started getting mean, and you know, so Abraham leaves and goes and starts his new religion.
Well, they altered everything.
Well, sure, yeah, they would.
They made it fit contemporary life, contemporary conditions. And in doing that, you know, because I remember when I was taught things years ago, it was like, you know, this is the way it is, you do it this way, don't change it. And the reason for that was not to change the knowledge or to be stuck in this thing. The reason for it was that there was almost a hidden code in the way you did ceremony, where if you learned these four steps or these seven steps, no matter what happened, it would always turn out right.
All right, that's what the upshot of what happened at Sinai was, is that, you know, you've got this God that appears in the form of a pillar of fire, pillar of smoke, voice only, the original Ten Commandments were actually written by the finger of God. They were the ones that were broken, you know, after they got down and saw that they were worshiping a calf. And then the second set were written by Moses as secretary for God. It was obviously, you know, a lower law. But you know, people talk about this, you know, possibly being the Shekinah, you know, possibly being a UFO that's traveled along with them, or a cloud vehicle of some kind that might have been shrouded in...
Well, you know, you have to understand, in the ancient, in those times, it was still the Hebrews, right? It wasn't the Jews yet. The Jews came after Joshua.
Yeah, until they came back from Babylon, they weren't known as Jews.
They were still the Hebrews.
Yeah.
And they still had the 14 tribes, and they had the connections, da-da-da-da-da.
Yeah.
Okay, but the first 500 years after they left Egypt, they were never allowed to say the name of God. It was the forbidden word. That was one. So they would always end their prayers with the only word that they knew, which is what they came out of Egypt with, which was Amen. 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 Amen Ra. Amen Hotep, the Pharaoh.
Amen. Amen.
So that was the only word that they used. When it comes down to, when you go into the Bible, they had about five or seven different titles for God.
Yeah, they weren't allowed to use the Yod Heh Vod Heh. They could call on as...
It was forbidden.
I am. You know, it was okay to say I am, you know. You couldn't refer to him directly. Nowadays, they just call him Hashem, which means the name. But they don't refer to him. They don't even write... Unless the word is written in a book, say if they're writing on the internet or a letter or email, they go G-D because it's not permanent.
Mm-hmm.
They're very, very careful and respectful.
But they were very strict with those rules.
Oh, yeah. Well,
and so what most people do not realize The simple fact is for almost 500 years, they had no name for God.
No, no, nothing.
So by the time it filtered down to Christianity, it became the nameless God.
Yeah.
The nameless one. The Creator.
Lord.
So we had removed, since they left Egypt, since the Hebrews left Egypt, we had removed our identification with God. And so God was spoken about in many different nomenclatures. And again, they had many different gods. There was the Lord of the mountain. There was the Lord of heaven. There was Jehovah. There was Yahweh. It just goes on. Okay? So, which one were they talking about? And the confusing thing in the actual text that are left in the Bible is it depends on which one you're reading, which one they're talking about.
And they were so used to visualizing, having a visual representation of it, that, the northern tribes, they totally screwed up. They had their temple, and they eventually brought in male prostitutes and all kinds of idols. And, they were carried away, fairly early on, more than 1,000 years before Jesus walked the earth. But the southern kingdom, one of the kings brought in just a little idol and said, it helps so much for us to be able to visualize, Yahweh. Well, that wasn't, they didn't screw up to the magnitude that the northern kingdom did, but they messed up. And at least they didn't call it by a different name, but they did make an idol. They removed the ark and made an idol.
Well, it's very interesting to listen to some of the Mayan stories about our ancient history from this same time period.
Yeah.
And what happened and how it went down. And, essentially what it comes down to is the Nephilim in the Judeo-Christian mythology are considered to be the fallen angels.
Yeah, the fallen ones.
The dark ones. The ones who rebelled against God.
Yeah.
Okay. It's kind of hard to even fight that myth. I'm not fighting that myth. This is about history. Okay? But if you come to the other place, even though there's a part of the Bible, and I believe it's Gabriel talking to Job, isn't it? Where he goes, and who built the temples in the south? Where were you? What is your knowledge of this? Where he's sort of questioning him about his faith and his position. And what he's talking about are the temples in Peru.
Yeah.
The giant stones. He's talking about Lake Titicaca. He's talking about the Lake of the Sun. He's talking about the Viracocha. He's talking about that whole time period. And that, who are you? You don't even know about this. You weren't even here. I was there. And I believe it's Gabriel. And he goes down into this. And the story goes on that what happened was that the gods came from the heavens. They intermarried and intermixed, and they had children here. And their children grew up. They built these magnificent cities. They had these magnificent cultures. And they often warred against these giants. They always talk about the giants. And we don't know for a fact that the giants were necessarily Anunnaki, okay? Because a lot of times they're just referred to as the giant guys, okay? And they would war against human beings, and they were a distortion and an abomination of creation, and eventually they got so perverted that they even ate the flesh of humans, okay? But it was always the tribal people here that were making war on them. The Cherokees have lots of stories about those giant guys on the East Coast that they fought.
Judicula.
Okay, they're all in the Athabascan, Algonquin stories about these giant beings that they had to fight all the time. That they would come in and they would devour them and take their daughters and their children. And, and they had wars and they defeated them. And they were all buried in the ground. And, there's been a lot of giants, not just out here that I found, and some other people, but there's been a lot of giants found in Virginia, Pennsylvania, okay, in the 19th century.
they were just sort of washed away and disposed of, you know. But they came down, they had their children, and they started the ancient mystery schools because their children had to know their origins. Now, two of the places that we know that those ancient mystery schools were, according to the Mayan, one of them was in Ixmal, and the other one was in Palenque. As we, Kukulkan comes down, he forms Palenque, he teaches them about DNA, genetics, he teaches them about mathematics. In all the stories, they're taught about hygiene and how to be human and how to live a life that puts us in a different place, in a higher state of consciousness. And they wanted to, they built these ancient mystery schools so that their children would have a knowledge of where they came from and that they were more than just earthly primates, okay? The women were taught in the temples of beauty, which is the same terminology that Edgar Cayce uses, by the way. When they built the ancient pyramids, they were called, he refers to them as the temples of beauty. He talks about these things that happened during a specific time period where the Atlanteans screwed everything up, and they were cutting through the matrix and the membranes, and people were coming in here from different dimensions. They came from Mars. They came from these other places. Many times there were individuals that had hundreds of entities living in the body because there wasn't enough body to contain all the souls that were here in this dreamscape. And that they would, they, some of them, we had the Minotaurs and the Centaurs and the, and they were, they created these temples of beauty to re-quantify and reclaim the originality of the intent. You're familiar with some of these. And the Mayans, again, referred to them as temples of beauty. They were the temples where the gods came from the heavens and communicated with us. The Incas had the same thing, where they built their place up there, like 15,000 feet. Help me with the name of the place.
Oh, Machu Picchu.
Yeah, Machu Picchu, because there's too many names, too many histories to be tried.
Well, they know that that's a royal, that was a royal city now.
And that's where the priesthood went to get instruction from those who came from the stars. It was a place for the priesthood. It wasn't a place for common people. And that's one of the reasons why they built it that high. The other thing was the vortexes and things. So that the people from the stars could come and go unobserved.
Well, it wasn't too far from the sea that they couldn't get fresh seafood to run up there within 24 hours.
Yeah, no, the tramways weren't that advanced yet. They couldn't run up the fresh lobster and stuff.
Yeah.
But you know, anyway, they did, you know, the histories are so the same, but they're so different. It's like the history here isn't about, you know, the war in the heavens was about the war of the gods. So it was about the war of the Anunnaki, essentially, and fighting for domination over the civilizations and colonies that they had here that had to do with their children, their hybrid children. Hence the development of royal bloodlines. The closer you were to the Anunnaki, the more royal your bloodline was. Because in your genetics was also the ability to understand higher thought forms and to grasp higher ideas and ideologies and mathematics and sciences. And some of the things that the people did here, which has been evidenced by those stones that that doctor found in Peru.
Mm-hmm. Nazca lines? Or, oh, the stones, yeah.
Yeah, the where the dinosaurs are with the people, and they're showing eye operations and brain operations.
Repent.
I mean, really high-tech stuff, okay? Operations that you didn't perform with a clamshell. Okay? And you also, think about it, when you're working with that kind of thing and you're working with operations on the eye and everything else, you had to have some sort of optical device to magnify what you were looking at.
Yep.
Right? So, you know, because of the destructions that happened
during the invasion. We don't know exactly what this stuff was as far as things that were left, the remnants of artifacts that were left on the surface. But what we know, and I'm not going to disclose it, is that there are many underground places where these things still exist.
Right.
And, so, you know, they're there for those who have the eyes to see and ears to hear and who have walked the path and they've seen it, and that's why this story refuses to die no matter what happens.
Well, maybe the cancer man was right in the last episode of X-Files, you know, 2012. It ended because they knew they're coming back.
Yeah.
That's where the final showdown of War Heaven happens, huh?
Pretty much.
Yeah, the final.
Like, well, okay, you want to live the experience of this dream out. Here's what we're going to do. We're going to let you live it out. It's not going to take anywhere. We know what's going to happen. But we'll be back just before the end to set things right.
Yeah.
And in the meanwhile, you're reckless, rebellious kids. You don't listen to anybody. So have at it, because it's a little too violent for us. You know. We'll be back later. We like the grapes and the bread and fish thing. That was
yeah,
nice.
Yeah.
But, you know, this butchery of everything is, like, just a little bit too far gone.
Yeah, they like to be fed, didn't they?
Yeah, and oh, yeah, they did. They loved it. They loved the fruits and everything else in the honey.
They didn't like all the noise that was going on.
No, don't forget mead, wine. That all came from the gods, right?
Yeah.
They like, I said, have a good time. Enjoy it. What's your problem? You know? But, okay, so it's just a very different slant on things when you listen to the old Mayan priests.
I'll see you.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments.
There is a growing movement of people who are deciding to make their lives better. At LifeVantage, we're in the business of change, of improving quality of life globally and restoring the ability to make dreams a reality. Your quest for personal fulfillment begins here. Our flagship product, Protandem, the Nrf2 Synergizer, is the key to fighting oxidative stress. This daily supplement, comprised of natural ingredients, activates the body's antioxidant enzymes to eliminate free radicals, which cause oxidative stress. Protandem has been tested in the laboratories of renowned universities, such as The Ohio State University, LSU, and the University of Colorado, Denver. These studies found on PubMed.gov, the U.S. government's online scientific library, clinically show that Protandem reduces oxidative stress.
When I saw that Protandem reduces oxidative stress by 40% in 30 days, I was all in for the rest of my life.
Everyone begs us for science as an industry. Where's your proof? Well, we have that also.
LifeVantage is devoted to advancing Nrf2 science and leading the fight against oxidative stress.
It's at www.defendyourownbody.com. That's defendyourownbody.com. Visit us now.
And there's a lot of stories in the Hopi, you know, if you're in there long enough where they trust you, they'll share some of these stories with you. And now, of course, Chief Dan put out the last prophecy where he literally talks about the guys coming from the stars. They're going to come back. They're not all going to be friendly. Some of them are literally going to kick our butts. And they're coming back to, you know, which is the whole purpose of the twins, coming back when we were on the Hale-Bopp thing.
Yeah.
You know, which unfortunately, with all the play it got on the airwaves, that whole important thing was just never talked about.
Yeah.
Okay? And it was probably because Art Bell got into a fight with the guy, you know, with the Hail and the Bop and the Hail Mary and all the other stuff. And, you know, just didn't want to go into there because he realized he walked into a sensitive area. But, you know, the twins have come back. I mean, the blue and the white-tailed comet came back. That was Hail Bop. And since then, we have this strange planet that we're looking at, this other sun, which is sort of reddish in the skies. It's not Mars. And they talked about the purifier that would be red, would be in the skies.
Yep.
And he would be fixed. Right? He wasn't going to be moving around.
And it
so it wasn't a comet. It was a planet or whatever.
Well, it might have been that... Red dwarf star, because 6 years to the very month that the elder said that the purifier would appear Here comes the very bright comet in the sky that they said would be there when it did appear.
Well,
and they said you might even need a telescope to find this object, but they said it would be found. And when Neat was in the sky, Comet Neat, here's this little dwarf, red dwarf star found. I mean, it's 10 light years from us, and we never saw it till then.
But it's fixed. It's not a comet.
No, it's a star. It's a red dwarf
star. And before that, the prelude to that was the twins would come back.
That's right.
One twin was at the North Pole, and one twin was at the South Pole.
Yep.
And they would shake the Earth, because they would shake the Earth to find out what was really going on and who held the original knowledge and what was the conditions here. And if they're at the North Pole and the South Pole, well, that would indicate the poles, the true North and South Poles, and the shifting in frequencies and electromagnetic field that we're experiencing. That the pole is shifting so many times within a day now that the airlines and the military and NASA don't even pay any attention to it because it's too unstable.
Oh, it's often the northern magnetic pole has now wandered out into international waters away from where it was, you know, around the Hudson Bay before. I mean, that scientific fact was announced by the Canadian geophysical guys.
And the shaking of the Earth terminology, well, we as humans, as beings, even rabbits too, but that's too far for some people to stretch. But we are bioelectromagnetic transducers. We respond to electromagnetic waves, our whole thought patterns. Everything that we do, the very process of thinking, is available to us because of the electromagnetic field. So if the electromagnetic fields are bouncing all over the place, now let me go back to the rabbits for a minute, okay? In the sense of birds are flying in the wrong direction at the wrong time of the year. You have hundreds of dolphins and hundreds of whales beaching themselves on the land. So they're getting all mixed up with their navigational sonar devices, okay? Salmon aren't coming home. We're seeing elk herds, you know, start migration at the wrong time, caribou at the wrong time, okay? So we're seeing their thought processes, the things that they have worked on for centuries and eons, getting all confused and chaotic. And if we look at the human world, well, it speaks for itself. This is the most chaotic times that we have ever been in since probably the original War of the Heavens.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, humanity is insane. The kind of crimes that we see on the airwaves, on the media, I mean, they're just sick, demented things. It's not Jesse James robbing a train to try to get the money for the poor to get the thing back from the river. It's about mutilating children. It's about brutal, senseless murders. It's about killing innocent people with no purpose. And it's just for the sake of violence, you know? So we're looking at all of this go on. If we look at what goes on, you know, with the music scene today, well, you know, the rock and roll that I grew up with, and I'm not an old fart to some, but the music that we grew up on, you know.
Welcome to the X-Zone, a place where fact is fiction,
and yes,
fiction is real. Now,
we
were
in
a host,
you know,
Robert
Holly Simon, everything, James Taylor, everything was bringing us to a higher perception of things.
Right.
A more ethereal, spiritual awareness. Now, it's like anti-God music.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like anti-heart, anti-love, anti... I don't know where this shit comes from, and that's all you can call it.
It's all downhill from...
Oh, that's fine. You're a big butt, baby, when you got to the boat.
Yeah.
Baby, you can't roll. It's like, what the hell is this, okay? This is Sodom and Gomorrah. So, we're seeing the chaos come, and we're seeing humanity become more violent and more chaotic. Nobody knows who to trust. Nobody knows... you know, someone said, well, how do we know who to believe? There's so many people coming up with things. And
oh, yeah.
I said, the reason why you don't know who to believe is because you don't know where your own heart is. You think it's all this complicated stuff up in your mind.
And the Hopis always say, think through the heart. Because if it resonates in you, then it resonates in heaven. If it doesn't resonate in you, then it doesn't resonate in heaven. Because you are God's creation. So what God makes eventually resonates to God's will. Because it has to. It's not that God has to stand there with a pitchfork and tell you move or else I'm going to stick you. It's called the war of valued life. And that's what the Eighth Thunder is about. That humanity would reach this point where we become aware of all truths that have been hidden for so long, which start to be revealed. They would start to come up from the earth. They would come up from places that we thought they were gone from. It's about humanity itself would take a course, and there would be a division. But it would be a division from the inner. It would not be a division.
Welcome to the X-Zone, religious movement. A place where fact is
there
fiction.
There would be religious movement.
Is reality.
Political
now,
movement.
Here's your host,
that would
Robert
result
Kahn.
Out of the chaos. But this was about people trying to hold on to the old paradigm, always resolving things by the same old, same old. Sex, drugs, rock and roll, and torture. And, you know, that's the story of men. Go watch the movies. What is it? It's always about guy getting killed or killed by the Indians or the Indians are killed by the soul. It's always about dying, crying, and suffering. You know, I had a fellow here from, I think it was India. And he was looking at our stories in the movies, and he said, everything about your Westerns and the legends of the cowboys, it's all about violence and killing. This whole land was created in blood. It's the truth, isn't it? So, that's the old paradigm. The new paradigm, which the Eighth Wonder speaks about, I mean the Eighth Thunder speaks about, is about consciousness. It's about, we would have the chance, the opportunity, just before the end time, and I'll get into that in a minute, where we could choose the outcome, where we could, instead of going through lifetime after lifetime after lifetime on the cycle of reincarnation, you could actually choose how you would deal with things in this life. And how you reacted to it would determine the outcome, the days of destiny that you walked in. And the other is still trying to manipulate us with fear, manipulate us with military might, strength, force. And the children of God, for the most part, are gentle souls. We don't think about revenge and killing. I mean, sometimes you get mad in a minute, and you know what you can do, and you revert, but you come out of it because you understand the laws of karma, and you understand that if you take this action, you're only going to perpetuate the same thing. So it's not about the children of God lay down like lambs for the slaughter. It's about they're using their minds, they're using their emotion, they're using their things to say no. They've gone as far as they can. They've moved into the outback of Canada and Alaska and all places in the world and the mountain places. You go into the mountains now, and 15 years ago there was a lot of room. You go in there, it's like houses everywhere, you know. Where did the grizzly bear go? But we've tried to walk away from it. And then there was this divine occurrence. And the divine occurrence is that our own will, our own choice, would create a phenomena, and the phenomena today is being realized in the indigo children and the crystal children.
Yep.
They simply do not follow the tour guide book.
Mm-hmm.
They are also have a different genetic, active genetic DNA structure than many of us who came prior. Their 22 strands of DNA are activated. They are immune to many diseases. Their awareness seems to come out of the blue and how they sit down and talk different languages and work mathematical problems out and sit down and play concertos at the piano. I mean, they're just